My Struggle by Carl Ove Knausgård comprises six volumes which describe the writer's life and thoughts in near Proustian detail. The series has been so talked about and acclaimed by critics in his native Norway that companies have reportedly had to declare Knausgård free days. The first volume is largely about his teenage years and his disquieting relationship with his father, and includes philosophical meditations on mortality, memory, art, and the act of writing itself. Book one of My Struggle, translated into English by Don Bartlett, is published by Archipelago Books, and Mr. Knausgård joins me now. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
And the book, which is told in the first person by a narrator with your name, we assume that it's completely autobiographical, or should we assume that you're doing something similar to what Marcel Proust did when he called his narrator Marcel?
No, my initial thought was that it should be true as I could get it.
So this is a memoir, although in Norway they called it a novel.
Yeah, that's because I use all the tools from the novel in this book. So I could retell a day in my life on 300 pages, you know, which is kind of impossible to think that we'd be done in a memoir. That's why. So for me, it's the same way of writing it as I did when I wrote straight novels.
Really. But I should assume that everything you say here is based on what really happened.
Yeah, that's the whole point.
You haven't fictionalized. You say in the book that you imbibed Marcel Proust's remembrance of things past. And like that work, My Struggle is quite long, six volumes. Proust was seven.
Yeah.
It includes extremely detailed descriptions of sense memories, events, places, scenes from your childhood. Was Proust the inspiration?
No. As a matter of fact, I didn't think of him when I was writing it. And I think my style of writing in this book is kind of opposite to Proust. I mean, he's so elegant, and it's kind of the perfect novel, you know, so well composed, and everything is brilliant in that book. I wrote my book very, very fast, 3,600 pages in 3 years, and I tried not to care about the literary quality in the language, you know, I just tried to write. So there is no sophistication in the book.
Well, since we read, most Americans read both of you in translation, we rely on the translators to give you a certain amount of elegance of language. John Bartlett's done very nicely by you. In Swan's Way, it's a Madeleine that calls up memories. In your book, it's the smell of a cleaning product that that brings you back to the past.
Yeah.
actually, you know, I thought about it and I realized that it's much more likely to be a cleaning product in my case, or the smell of gasoline at a service station.
Yeah, that's right. And I wanted the book to be as physical, evocative as possible. That was... I mean, the scene you describe is from when my father dies, and all I do those 4 or 5 days after he died is to cry and to clean. And I try to describe the feeling of... I thought I hated my father before he died.
Yeah, it's surprising that you cried.
Yeah, and I didn't really know why I did that, but it was very emotional for me, and I wanted to recreate that feeling in the book. And my life before that was kind of, I felt a kind of meaninglessness to my life also when I started writing this. So this is really a hunt for meaning in a way. But then when my father died, I had an experience of everything was becoming meaningful. Even washing product was meaningful, kind of glowing with meaning. So I wanted to recreate that, you know, feeling.
It also led to a kind of a reconciliation with your brother.
Yeah.
So this was an important moment, cleaning out your father's house, which was a total mess.
Yeah, it looked like hell there. He was, when I grew up, he was kind of a respected, you know what I mean, normal, respected member of society. And then he started to drink when he was 40, left the family, became an alcoholic, and died 14 years later. And he died in my grandmother's house. He had lost his job, lost everything. And we didn't know what was going on there, really. And then we went down there. He was dead the day before. And we found out it looked like kind of a junkie's nest or something.
Even though your grandmother was still living there.
Yeah. And we discovered during those days that probably she and him have been drinking together. And that was totally horrible. But I read just the other day an interview with Mr. Salman Rushdie. And he said, if you're a writer, even if really horrible, terrible things happens to you, there is always a little person on your shoulder saying, this is a story, this is a story. And it was like that when my father died. I knew I have to write that someday.
Now, the title, My Struggle, is provocative. It's the same thing that Hitler used for a title,
yeah.
Mein Kampf. In Norwegian, it's Min Kamp.
Yeah.
Germany and England wouldn't use the title.
No, in Germany it was really impossible, and it was no use. I didn't want to use the title in any commercial way or to make a fuss about the books. And in Germany, it's called. Each volume has one title, a different title. The first one is Sterben, which is death. Second one is Leben, which is love, and so on.
But isn't it a provocative title in Norway as well? After all, Norway wound up being part of...
Yes, it was.
It allied itself with Hitler. One of its most famous writers, Knut Hamsun, was a Hitler supporter.
Yeah, and all of this is a theme and a subject in the book as well. But I had my first title, working title, was Argentina, which kind of is a neutral title. And then I come up with this idea, my struggle, and I called my editor, and he said, no, can't do it. But then 10 days later, he called me back, it's okay, you can do it. And I did it. And for me, it's the literal meaning of my struggle. It's my, and it's a struggle. And it's a struggle about everyday life. It's a struggling about raising children. It's a struggling in love. It's a struggling about writing, everything. But at the same time, this title kind of have a idealistic or politics, you know, over, what's the word? Over there. And I wanted the difference to...
And there's also a subtext here that refers to Nazis now and then, or that pass in Norway. The book has sold 500,000 copies in Norway. This is a country of 5 million people. That's a lot of books.
Yeah.
Do you think that you've touched on a national nerve?
In a way, I think so. When I wrote it, I thought this as a kind of a realistic, modernistic, experimental prose. But in the end, it was immensely popular in Norway. And I got a lot of letters from Norwegian and from Scandinavian. And I don't really know why.
Do you think that they saw themselves?
That's the basic line in those letters. They want to tell me about their lives. And I think our lives are more similar than we normally believe, I think. And I try to be as honest as possible. And I think that is something that people recognize in themselves. Not the specific details, not the stories I'm telling, but just the fact that I'm trying to reveal everything on the inside, and that's very much alike. I mean, it's the same thing being 16, I think, wherever you grew up. It's the same thing falling in love. It's the same thing losing your parents. I mean, all those things I'm dealing with there is kind of common for everybody.
My guest is Karl Ove Knausgård, Knausgaard. The first volume of his six-volume series called My Struggle has just been published in this country by Archipelago Books. You say that writing My Struggle was an act of literary suicide, and in the last volume you say you'll no longer be an author.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You've quit writing?
Not writing, but I quit writing novels or quit writing fiction. I write essays at the moment. But that sentence was the only thing I knew all the way during those 3,600 pages. I wanted the book to end in that sentence. Mm-hmm. And I want, you know, to be in that mental state where I could say that and mean that I'm no longer an author. Because this is also a book about want to being a writer, have ambition to write. It's about literature and life and where those things mixed. And the problem for me in my life is that I don't think I live my life like I should. I live it in literature. I live it in reading, you know. So I wanted that to end.
But you also are telling your side of the story. Your father's family threatened to sue you over publication of the series. Your ex-wife made a radio documentary about her side of the story. Did your marriage suffer because you were working on this book?
Yes.
Did she know what you were saying about her?
My ex-wife did, yeah. Everybody I'm writing about has received a copy of the book before it's published, so everybody has read about it. But my wife, I wrote tried to write as honestly as I could as with my present wife. And that resulted in kind of a crisis between us two, because those things, you maybe know it, but you shouldn't. It's very different when you read it.
There are many people who are concerned about how honest you can be when you're writing about living people. A number of memoirs have said to me, well, I couldn't have written this book while my mother was alive, my father was alive, or whatever. If you're going to write it about your complete life, you have no choice
but
to include people who are alive and to give your opinion. Similar thing happened with Salman Rushdie in his new book, Joseph Anton.
Yeah.
I could see where some people who had been close to him might be a bit upset.
Yeah. There's been a lot of that in when I published these books. But I think it's not that I reveal something secret. I think that's not a problem. But I think the problem is that I take something from them and use it to my own purpose. And they lose control over it. And, you know, I got the money and everything. And there's nothing left, really.
Well, also, it's what you remember. If you take two people who had the same experience, siblings, and you ask them to tell that story, even if they get along perfectly well, they're going to tell you two very different stories.
Yes.
And if you depict somebody as having been rather obnoxious in a certain moment, they will be upset. They'll feel that you're insulting them.
And that's really interesting, because it's the same within yourself. I mean, you have a story when you're 16. It's completely different when you're 14. It's just changing through your life, the story of your own life.
You often take a step back from the story and reflect on the act of writing. For instance, you say, writing is drawing the essence of what we know out of the shadows, not what happens there, not what actions are played out there, but the there itself.
Yeah.
Can you say a bit more about that?
That's a very... and you have wrote it, but it's kind of a long time ago, and it's very difficult to deal with these things in English for me. But I think what I've tried to do in this book is to give language to those things that we normally just are doing and keep forgetting. I mean, all the things in our daily lives which just disappears. And I wanted to create a language for the in-between. So there is no plot, there is no dramatic structure in it. I try to recreate, you know, aspects of the daily life, the things that we do but keep forgetting about.
And you have a scene in this book in which an editor says, where's the story?
Yeah, that keeps happening to me.
Uh-huh. But there is a story, obviously, here.
Yeah.
In a way, it's the story of how our mind works throughout, as we relate to different things throughout our lives.
Yeah.
And you say you wrote this sometime in the past, and you are writing it about an earlier time in the past. And you've written that although this book documents your past, now the past is barely present in your thoughts. Have you taken care of it by writing it all down?
That's a difficult question, really, because this has been a process, and I keep forgetting what I have been writing, so I really don't know what's in the books. And also, I wrote it so quickly, so I'd be surprised when I open, for instance, the fourth volume and read, did I really write this, you know? Hmm. So I've just done it and forgot about it.
You studied art, didn't you?
Yes, I did for a while.
And you write about art at several points in the book. You write about having about being moved by a painting by Constable.
Mm-hmm.
I just love his oil sketches. You also mentioned Edvard Munch, not surprisingly, the Norwegian painter. You even have a scream interrupting your text at one point. Do you feel an affinity to Munch?
Yes, I do in a way, because I envy painters, really, because they are dealing with emotions directly, you know. They don't go the way through intellectual concepts or words or ideas. They just have the impression of something. And some of his paintings really moves me. It does, yeah. But this is quite a mystery for me. And I'm trying to write, that's why I write a lot about it. The mystery of seeing a painting from the 17th century, just a still lab and just, you know, a glass or wine or something. And why is that moving us? Why is that feeling of almost something hypnotical or magic or even holy? Why is that? What is it in those pictures that's moving us? I mean, a cloud of Constable. Why should that drive me to tears by looking at it. What is art about, you know?
Do you think you're seeing the same thing that a contemporary of Constable saw? When you read some of the great Norwegian writers, Sigrid Undset or Knut Hamsun, are you, because you are a man right now of the 21st century, are you reading the same thing that somebody would have read at the time?
That's a fascinating thing.
Because you're going to have to deal with that yourself as people read this book over the years.
The fascinating thing about literature is that it is possible to get close to another human being from another century. And that's what literature are about, that intimacy, you know. And I think, it's very much the same. But the interesting thing is, if you read a work from the 18th century, let's say, and it feels dated, it feels not relevant, what's going on there, you know? Or from the 60s, if you read a book from the 60s, and all you can see is the 60s. That's the presence of the self. I mean, that's what this is about. If you just go with the flow and write only about contemporary things inside a kind of a contemporary style, where there is no outside, then you are dated in 10 years, 20 years. But so what this is about is, what I like to read is, for instance, Gombrowicz, the Polish writer, which has a really strong self. And that's, I think, the idea of originality comes from. As an artist, you have to be outside of your contemporary society in a way to see it, to describe it. And that outside is very important.
We don't have a lot of time, but you also mention Aksay Sandemose as someone who destroyed and never moved on, because you've said writing is more about destroying than creating. One of his concepts was the Jante law, which you mentioned in the book. What's that?
That's very strong. He tried to describe a very strong feeling in Scandinavia about you are not supposed to be anyone, you're not supposed to, don't think you are special, you know? You are like everybody else. But the interesting thing is that his son, which is a Marxist philosopher now, he said this is a good thing. I mean, Sandemose wrote this as a very bad thing, you know? The society restricts you, you know? But his son turns it the other way around and said this is a good thing. This means you are one of us, you know? But then I have to say the son really, really hated his father. And he wrote a book about him, which was kind of the most merciless and brutal slaughter of a man I've ever read.
Well, to write a 6-volume book in which you include everything you've been thinking about for quite a while, that's an act of ego. I suspect the son might not like your writing as much as the father would have.
That is right.
Carl Ove Knausgård will be at the Brooklyn Book Festival as part of a panel discussion about the personal in fiction this Sunday at 11 a.m. at the Brooklyn Borough Hall. For more information about that, you can visit our show page at WNYC.org. The first volume of the 6-volume My Struggle has just been published in this country by Archipelago Books, will we be seeing the other volumes relatively soon, or are you going to have to keep on coming back each time another one is published?
The next one is coming in this next spring, I think, in April.
Well, it's a lot of translating, all done by Mr. Bartlett. Thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you for having me.